Today I'm talking with Susie Pepper Rollins. She's got a new book out called Teaching in the Fast Lane, How to Create Active Learning Experiences. You're going to love it. Thanks for being here. Enjoy.
You are listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, a podcast for educators, helping you help kids achieve their dreams. And now here's Steve with this week's show.
Hey, welcome back. Today I'm talking with Susie Pepper Rollins. She's an author who is focused on creating academic success for all learners. She's a national presenter. She's author of Learning in the Fast Lane from 2014. She's founder of Math in the Fast Lane, which you can find at mathinfastlane.com. And she has a new project called myedexpert.com. Welcome back, Susie.
Hi, Dr. Mileto. How are you?
Doing great. Glad to have you here. And I got to tell you, you've hit a home run here again. You got an awesome book.
Thank you.
Well, appreciate what you do. And, you know, one of the things I wanted to ask you just kind of start off is, what motivates you to try and help teachers?
Well, first of all, I love being a teacher. I became a teacher because my teacher saved me. They saw something in me that I probably didn't see in myself, and that was a huge turning point for me. I had a teacher in high school who loaded us up and took us to the University of Texas one day. I'd never been on a college campus. I thought, hey, I can do this. And so they played a huge role in my life. I love being a teacher. I love working with kids. I love working with teachers, and I just find it very challenging and rewarding.
Awesome. That is, it's being able to help people, help kids. Good stuff.
I was not born to be a banker. Let's just say it that way.
Nice.
No one's account would add up.
That's funny. Okay. All you bankers out there.
Don't hire me.
That's funny. So tell me what do you like most about supporting teachers? Because your books are very good tools to help them in the classroom. So tell me what you like most about doing that.
Well, I'll tell you, first of all, teachers are wonderful. I missed up, and that is the truth, in the presence of great teaching. It is, it's a wonderful career, and I find it very rewarding to see things move. You know, we see kids in the beginning of the class who don't know a darn thing about something, right?
Right.
And by the time the bell rings, it's like, wow, look what they can do. I mean, how can you do that in any other field? You know, it's the greatest thing in the world to be a teacher. When I left my classroom, I sobbed. I was forced to be a leader. How's that? A most reluctant leader in the world. So I don't think I've ever had a job I've liked more than being a classroom teacher. It's just so I'm a little jealous right now, you know, for not having a classroom. But what I've learned in these books that I do a lot of research on is kind of what you know as a teacher. But when you see the research, you're like, wow, that really is true. The way we craft our lessons, the way we craft our learning episodes is amazingly important. It determines how motivated a student's going to be, how hard they're going to work that day, how much they're going to remember, if they want to come to class. And it's a very powerful thing, crafting learning experiences. And that's what this book's about, really, is how we can really change our classroom practices and make them so impactful for our kids.
Excellent. You know, one of the things I like about your books is that they're easy to read and understand. You explain the research in a very easy to understandable way, but it's also your book is something that you don't get caught up in needing to have somebody interpret it because it's written on too high a level, or you know, you just don't understand what they're talking about. And I've heard you say that what you're trying to go for is, what would this look like tomorrow? Can you explain that, what you're saying there?
Well, my goal on my writing and on my professional development is, I want you to be able to do this tomorrow. So in my professional development, we actually create a lesson throughout the day. So I'll present some of the research, so some examples of that, and then now I turn it over to your team, and you create that. So to me, that's, if I don't want to go to professional development for 8 hours, get back to a building, and like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do with any of that. So I'm anti that. So what I try to do is here's the research. This is what it looks like. Because I want to know as a teacher that, hey, I'm on firm ground with research. This is really works for kids. But I also want some examples. Like, it drives me nuts to read books that are heavy in research, but they don't have any pictures in them. You know, like, show me what that looks like. Give me an example of a strategy I could use. So that's basically what I do, is I pore over the research and I think, okay, this is what that would look like. Let's go try that. And darn if the research isn't right, kids really do respond to that. So I take that as a great compliment, because I try to study and read all the research and say, okay, this is what that looks like in the classroom.
Awesome. You know, one of the things that I want to make sure that we touch on here is that you're in teaching in the fast lane, you get into the idea of active learning, the idea of the active classroom. Can you talk just a little bit about that, and then we'll come back to the book a little bit more?
Well, you know, it conjures up an image. If you say active classroom, we all have a different image of it, right? I'll tell you what it's not. It doesn't lack structure. We have to have structure in our classrooms. But it's a structure that we can all work with, where the teachers talk less and the students do more. I make careful decisions about what do I need to explicitly teach and what can my kids get on their own, where they can discover. I'll tell you something that we get into the habit of is I'll look at the curriculum and the books and everything, and I'll go home and plan, right? And I'll go read and study, and I take in what's important and mark out what's not, and I create a PowerPoint, and I'm up very late at night working. I am meeting my learning target, because what's happening is tomorrow I'm kind of pushing that out to students, right? Rather than letting them do a lot of that. Because remember, rigor is really about the level of thinking our kids are engaged in, not the level of thinking I'm engaged in, right? So I want to craft these experiences where they can discover and do.
Excellent. In the introduction to Teaching in the Fast Lane, you say, we have inadvertently outworked, outthought, outparticipated, and probably even outlearned our students. What are you getting at there?
Well, look, we don't want to be in the situation where we're the most active person in the classroom. I'm writing, I'm erasing, I'm doing, I'm running, I'm talking, I'm writing. I'm just working, you know?
Yes.
And so, but the reality is, it is very hard work teaching, but I got to think of my work differently. What are my students going to do? What's their work going to be? And I want to see their work develop from the opening minutes to the closing minutes. I want to see a crescendo of their work, that they're understanding more and more and more. So I need to see that visible evidence ongoing. In an active classroom, there's not as much pressure on the last 3 minutes of, oh, let's get a ticket out of the door, you know, because we're collecting evidence the whole time. I want students to see themselves as learners and collectors of evidence. One thing I read once that just really blew me away was feedback begins with their work. So the feedback they're giving me is their work. So I'm looking at your work develop, and that's telling me as a teacher, okay, I can see your work. Even when we're reading, and even if they're doing silent reading or reading with a partner, those books need to be covered in sticky notes with their thoughts. I need to see inside their thoughts all the time so that I can go around and say, oh my gosh, I see that you noted that as a critical turning point in the war. Tell me about that. So it's that kind of a classroom where there's structure, but there's a period where the students are working pretty much throughout the whole time. The teach time is pretty darn short. Then we come out of the front of that room, and I'm sitting with my students. I'm working with my students. I'm talking to my students. Those are the great days. I'll tell you one lesson I created one time that was the best lesson I've ever made. And we were in the media center working. And I spent a lot of time on this, and they were working in pairs, and it was a kind of a station kind of lesson. And I remember feeling a little lost, like, what am I supposed to do now? Because they were so on top of it. And I would walk up to my students, and they kept waving me off. They'd say, we don't need you. We're fine. We got it. Go away. You know what I mean? I jokingly say I could go get my tires rotated on those days, you know, and come back. That's the kind of lesson I want to create, is where they're just so pulled in. So, yes, the hard work is me creating, and then I can enjoy my students.
Excellent. And so let's kind of use that to kind of segue into, in order to get those, to really create those lessons like that, you got to plan.
Right. And I plan differently. Look, when I'm with teachers, here's our process we do. We first create our walls. We map out our unit. We don't just give one essential question, because that gets us into a world where, oh, I did one thing. I'll never see it again. As long as I live, I'm going to put it in the bin. You know, thank goodness I'm done. We build a wall, and there are examples in the book that show for the whole unit perspective. So that's the first thing. I want students to understand what it feels like to reach a goal. The next thing we do is, are there some scaffolding things that we get that, we talk about that in planning. The next thing, and I use a pie chart to plan. I don't use a long template. So we're going to open with something really compelling that taps into prior knowledge and gets me excited about this. Then I'm going to check. I'm going to develop their work. Now I'm going to teach, but for a short period of time. Remember, A high school kid honestly can pay attention for about 10 or 11 minutes. It's not that much higher than an elementary kid. So this idea that we can push through is not helpful. Even in college, kids remember 70% of the opening minutes, and then it drops to almost nothing. So we have to really understand the attention span of our kids, give them and transition throughout the lesson. But in an active classroom, there's always a work period that where they start processing, they're working together, we're working. It's new material. They're going to work on it. And our goal is to gradually get them to work independently. So there's a thought process into how we plan. We open with our targets. We teach what we need to teach. We check for understanding. They're going to work together now. Now they're ready to work independently. So it's sort of that process that goes behind it.
Excellent. And one of the things that happens, I know that like when, and you have this section in the book where you talk about observing the classroom, you get into something you call pie charts. And I know that you use these pie charts to show the teacher where they're spending their time. Can you go into a little bit of detail about that with us?
Right. If you look at my notebooks when I'm in a building, all I draw are pie charts. Isn't that crazy? I'll put the teacher's name or the room number. And then wherever I'm walking in, if I'm walking into the work period, then I start making notes in the work period. If I walk in the beginning, I know what the beginning should look like. So when I debrief, and I try to debrief with the teacher right before I leave, because I can't stand it when people come in my classroom and they never tell me what I did well or what. I always think, am I going to be fired? I don't know. Where are they? Where'd they go? So I like to at least have a conversation. But what the conversation is about the pie chart. It's about how that lesson was crafted and where I saw some fantastic things. For example, I use this example in the book. I saw a teacher one time in science. He was mesmerizing in the opening minutes. We were all captivated. It was amazing. Then he did his teach time. Kids took some notes. They talked. He gave them some moments to, you know, to talk back and forth. I thought, well, this is fantastic. And it was this 100% engagement lesson. Then he did something that it dropped drastically because he went to round robin reading, where one kid reads, and one other kid reads, and another kid reads, right, and another kid reads. Three are wanting to go to the nurse now. You know, one wants to call her congressman. So it just really drops off. So at the break, what I could just show him is the pie chart and say, look, 100% engagement, 100% engagement, fantastic, and now we dropped. And we were able to talk right then in the hall about, let's tweak that part. So we went in and tweaked it, did something differently, did a paired reading, went right back up to 100% engagement. So to me, it's really about analyzing the lesson, how we have constructed that lesson to keep students, you know, we're looking at how the brain learns and all these things that we want to do, and there's a process in place. So I'm just a big fan of using the pie chart now rather than a long template, because a template doesn't give me time or process or purpose. And every part of that lesson has a distinct mission. And that's what we talk about heavily in the book, is what's the mission of each part of that lesson?
That's awesome, because I think sometimes people get caught up in just trying to please the administrator that's requiring the lesson plan, instead of thinking about the lesson plan as something that I need to do.
You know, that's funny, because I put on one of my questions to ponder in the book is, I know I've done this, and I ask teachers this, have you ever filled out the form for the school and then written your lesson on another piece of paper? And we're all going to say, yes, here's the stuff you need from me. Now let me go ahead and do my work on my paper. So if we're doing that, is that really working for us, right? So, you know, and I want to see my students on fire. So in an active classroom, there's less teacher talk, more student talk, less teacher work, more student work. But it takes a while to craft these lessons, and you have to kind of practice at them. I mentioned in there that it has to be a safe environment. For teachers, too, because if I'm going to try some new stuff, I need to know that my leaders are on board with me, that some days it might be a little bit messy, you know, because I'm trying some new things on my teaching as well. So we want to support that in teachers, too, that, hey, I'm going on a limb a little bit today. I'm going to try something a little new, like a station, or you got my back, right, on this, right? So that's something I mentioned, too.
Excellent. You know, one of the things you mentioned just a second ago, and I'm going to come back, because you mentioned a couple of things I want to talk about. One of the things you mentioned in at the end of your chapters, you have a section called Questions to Ponder. Why'd you put that in there? And what's kind of your purpose at the end of those chapters when you talk about questions to ponder?
To ponder. No, I'm kidding. Well, you know, I think being in buildings, I'm trying to weave in more your real world. Like what's going on in your building? What obstacles are we facing that make this either doable or something we need to work on, like time or our practices in place? Sometimes we've done things for years and we don't realize that, you know, maybe we need to step back a little bit, take a look at what we're doing.
I love that. That's you know, at each end of the chapter, you almost want to forgive me if you're like, no, don't say that, but you know, you almost want to start the chapter by looking at your questions to ponder, so that then you come back and you start reading the chapter and you go, oh, this is something. Now I kind of see where this is all connected.
Reading ahead, Dr. Mileto, is illegal in 35 states.
Not allowed to read ahead.
Sorry.
Oh my gosh. No, you're right. I think I was stopped many times. Yes.
Don't you read ahead?
Are you reading ahead? Yes. You can't do that.
No.
I specifically remember a college class one time who said, "Wait a second, you're taking stuff out of the next chapter." No, we're not there yet. You do not know that information yet. Thank you. Okay, good.
I just want to clarify.
Thank you. Are we in one of those states? I just want to know.
Yes.
Oh, no. So let's talk about, you also said in a few minutes ago, you started talking about stations. You have a little different take on stations. So let's talk about stations and some of the difficulties that you might run into or centered around that and how they should.
Hey, that was funny, centered around
like that.
I like
the word
that.
Centered,
that's
right?
A good one. Well, stations, you know, it's something that's in our toolkit. It's a good thing. And it's part of the active classroom. It's one of the things I might choose to do with that content. But we have to be a little bit careful with stations, because at the end of each station, that student should be masterful of that learning target, right? Or proficient at that learning target, maybe not masterful. So here are some of the questions or dilemmas we face when we create stations, and I like stations and I use them. Is number one decision is, are we going to have a teacher station? And that's a big decision, because what that does is, for example, in math, that gives me the opportunity to work with a smaller group of students, which is one of the advantages of stations, right? But what happens at the other stations? That may mean that I have to create stations that are more self-regulatory, right?
Right.
So how am I going to give those other kids feedback? And how do I know if they're struggling or if it's too easy? So I have to be careful, because when I do walks, when I would first see stations, I'd say, oh, they're doing stations. Kids love stations. This is great. They're all happy. But then I'd have to go back and look at every single task. So we want to make sure that if I complete these tasks, that I am proficient at that learning target. And then the decision is, do I want to be available to go to each station? You have to have, I typically do an anchor with the stations. So, and I want work at each station. So I want some evidence from every single station of what I've learned at each station. So I love stations. We just have to kind of think them through, you know, of how we're going to develop them.
I got you. That's, you know, and it becomes obvious. You go into some classes where we've got this station where there's some heavy-duty thinking going on, and we got this station over here, there's some heavy-duty connectivity going on. We got this station over here, we got this station over here, and we got this station over here. These last three, you wonder if they're just kind of timekeepers until they get to the other two that are the real meat of the lesson. And that's not really how it's supposed to work, is it?
No, but I mean, again, I'm a fan, but we have to think about it. Like, I've even created stations in buildings where we've combined two classrooms, as scary as that sounds.
Ooh.
And we have them walk across the hall. And they've been fantastic. So we'll have some hands-on things here. We'll have some technology over here. We have the teacher over here with an error analysis or something that's very challenging. So I'm a fan, but I've learned over time that I've really got to look kind of critically about how we're creating them to make sure that they're really going to do what we want them to accomplish.
Excellent. So in there, you also mentioned something. You talked about when I do walks. Kind of tell the audience what you're talking about there.
Well, many times I'm a consultant and an author, right? So I'll be invited, which is so much fun, to go into buildings. So I'll only have 10 or 11, 20 minutes at the most in the classroom. So I'm looking for certain things. And that's, again, where I use my pie chart. When I'm in a building, it's completely non-evaluative. It's fun. And I have no problem speaking up. For example, if I'm watching a group and I'll say, you know what, this is so mesmerizing. Everybody's nodding their head. We got a thumbs up, which doesn't mean much to me. So I'll go ahead and do a sticky note. I'll say, you know what, can we just do one problem on a sticky note? Because I want to know before I leave that classroom, where are we? One practice, I didn't put this in the book, Dr. Mileto, but one thing I do when I'm in buildings is departments will take a sticky note on Wednesdays or Tuesdays, whatever day they want to do, and we all decide amongst ourselves, let's do the one math problem or one science event, whatever our learning target is. And let's take that to our data room. So we take those stickies to a data room, and we're just in a real comfortable, safe way, say, today, this is where we are. So that's the kind of thing I'll do on a walk, is I'll just stop and say, let me just see what you know right now.
Excellent. And it's kind of fascinating when if you're able to take other staff members on walks like that. I know when they start seeing what's going on in their colleagues' rooms and in their peers' rooms, and I'm not talking about bad, I'm talking about good stuff, when they start realizing how they could change their practices because now they're seeing.
Oh, I love that practice, because when I'm a teacher, I just know what's happening in my four walls, right?
Right.
So I need to know, and I love that. And we'll just leave a feedback form at the door, and we draw a pie chart even, and you just fill out where you were, how that worked. And we give that teacher some feedback, and I think it builds a sense of community too.
Nice. One of the things that you've mentioned a couple of different times, and I just want to kind of go back to, is you mentioned something called standard walls. What is that?
Well, standards walls are where we map out the unit from a unit perspective. And I'll tell you the background. They're a mixture of an advanced organizer, which has a very high effect size, and a concept map, where we help students organize a large amount of information. But we're basically going to show you that, look, we're going to be on this unit for 3.5 weeks, and there are going to be 6 learning targets. And we map them out. And as I and the first thing I want to see in the opening minutes is a very compelling success starter and what our learning target is. And we just go over to that wall, or we have a student go to the wall. And this is our target. As I see you, Dr. Mileto, really reaching that goal, I might say, hey, can I just put that as an example up there on our wall? So we're actually showing concrete examples. I'm in classrooms all the time. You cannot believe how excited kids get when we meet a goal. And the teachers will put a check mark or a star or whatever, and we talk about it and say, we're going to move on. It's like, yay, we're moving on. And that's part of student motivation, that we met our goal. Think about what it's like to be a student, all right? We go to one class, and it's social studies, and we're learning the Trail of Tears. Then we go to a next class, it's onomatopoeia and metaphors. We go to the next class, it's about cell walls and vacuoles. We go to health, it's about fallopian tubes and ovaries. And then we go to art, and it's about Manet and Monet. And I go home, and I say to my parents, say, what did you learn today? And I say, what? I couldn't possibly tell you, right? Something about Andrew Jackson's ovaries is what I always joke about because I've had so many things today. So what standards walls do is rein that in for kids. This is where we are. This is what we're doing. Now we have another class, and this is where we are. So it helps them remember. It enhances rigor. It enhances student motivation. And it keeps me on track as a teacher because I'll look over at my wall and I'll say, wait a minute, our verb is compare and contrast, not identify. So we're going to have to ramp this up. It keeps me really focused on what our learning, what I want you to know, you know, by the time we're through with this unit.
That's awesome. And I think I missed that class about Andrew Jackson's ovaries.
Well, it's pretty important. I think I was in a grad class.
In a grad class?
You have to be a graduate student to learn about those things.
Nice, man. I missed out.
That's illegal in 20 states.
We got to look out for these laws, man.
This is crazy state laws.
Nice. Well, you know, one of the things that I got to make sure that I get to is one of the things I love that you do in your books is usually you have a section at the end where you get into barriers or you get into how to deal with difficult problems and things like this. And in this section in this book, you get into challenges and solutions in the active classroom. And you say this, structure and passivity are not synonymous. Structure and passivity are not synonymous. In every lesson, students begin with something compelling to tap into prior knowledge and an explicit learning target is identified. And you just said that just a second ago. Can we just kind of delve into that a little bit more?
On the challenges and just the challenges we face?
Yes.
In implementing an active classroom. There was a study I used in the book, and it resonated with me because it's exactly what I see. Teachers saw when they tried to implement more of an active classroom, students felt a sense of community, and that's a really important thing. They had partners. Think about what it's like to be in an inactive traditional classroom where we're sitting at a desk and I don't get to really have a lot of conversations or work together. You can feel isolated. In an active classroom, there's a sense of community. So teachers noticed that students really liked class a lot more. They belonged to class. Their rigor was higher. Their work went up. One thing that the challenges were is what I see is, okay, I got to keep them talking about the right thing, right? It's because I am going to let go a little bit. And the time to plan. Those were probably the two biggest challenges that teachers report back. Time is something I address in there because teachers are already working, and I cite some evidence in there. We're already working Sunday.
Sundays
are like Wednesdays, right?
Yes.
So one thing, you know, we want to think about is where's our time going in every building? And supporting teachers, like many decisions have to be made by a teacher on that lesson, but there are things we can certainly help with, right? So let's try to support teachers in what we can do, whether it's parent helpers, whether it's cutting things, you know, because some of these active techniques like sorting, they take a little while to make. So those are some of the barriers. And what was interesting is on that study is teachers said in the beginning there were students who were uncomfortable with an active classroom. Because think about it. If I'm just being required to sit here and listen and turn something in, there are a lot of hiding places in that scenario. In an active classroom, there's no place to hide. I've got a partner. I've got a team that's waiting on my piece of some work. you know, and, or I'm presenting in a little mini presentation to my team, I've got to be active. And so it's a different, we're talking about a different type of classroom. We've all had these great lessons. It's hard to sustain them. So what I'm trying to write about is really those great days, how we can have more of those great days where kids are excited about class, time flies, everybody's engaged. And that relates to the lesson. I know, I'm going to be very honest, on the days that I had not a very good lesson, I had more discipline issues, right?
Right, right.
On the days that things went well, I'm like, wow, everybody did a great job day. Other days, I'm working on my resume, you know? So I've got, that's what this is about, is how to really make, how to make that happen on a consistent basis.
That's awesome. You know, it's funny what you just said, because that's, you know, We can be our own worst enemy. We can become very inconsistent because of us, as opposed to the kids. And, you know, the better we can make ourselves become consistent and, be, and recognize that, I think that's important to, you know, an important part of who we are as teachers, I guess, in the classroom. I'm going to leave the book here for a minute, because one of the things that I know you've got a new project going on called MyEdExpert.com. Can you share a little bit about that?
It's a crazy little thing I'm doing. I when I was working on the book, I had this idea of what if other educational authors, presenters, we have a lot of resources that we have. Why don't we share some of those? So what I've done is enlisted some of my favorite ed authors, and we're all, and it just started a few weeks ago. What we're doing is we're all on one website called My Ed Expert. And I would say the bulk of the stuff are free uploads. Some are there's a small, you know, amount that we charge for them. For example, I'll give you an example. There's a guy who's a gifted ed author who writes a different kind of math problem. He writes math problems that take 3 days to solve and have multiple answers. That's a tough thing to find, but very, that's intriguing to me, right? So he joined us. So, you know, it's maybe something that, you know, I couldn't create myself, or I, you know, would be difficult, but I could reach out to someone who's there. So, you know, we just started a few weeks ago, but it's really been a fun project. So, you know, that's kind of the thought behind it.
Awesome. Is it just, they just go to that website and
go check it out. Go look around and see if there's some things that you might like. We have writing experts. We have math experts. We have social, we have a lady who's works in building creative thinking in her students. What I'm looking for are people like that who have sort of a unique perspective on things, and they've been doing this for years and they have some resources. So, you know, I just think it's kind of a good idea. So
that's
there
awesome.
You go.
That's awesome. Great place to go to. So that's MyEdExpert.com, and I have those links in the show notes to get there. So before we go, if listeners would like to contact you, how can they, if they want to get in touch?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll just give you my email. How's that? It's SusiePRollins@gmail.com.
Excellent.
So you can find me, and that's on the book jacket, too.
Excellent. I'll have that in the show notes.
Or you know what? You could go to My Ed Expert, because I'm a contributor, too.
Excellent.
You can find me there, too. I started it. I better be on there, right?
I didn't even think to ask that. That's
hey,
good.
Hey, go to My Ed Expert. You'll see my picture. Woo!
Excellent, excellent. So you got me all messed up here. I got it.
Pretty exciting stuff.
That is very exciting stuff, and I wish the best with that. So, I want to ask you one last question, and this question is, if you had a chance to make what you think is your perfect classroom, what it would look like, and I'm talking about how you set it up so that you can work with the kids to help them learn, what would that perfect classroom look like? What would you have in it that would be just that those things that you want? And don't worry about money.
Don't worry about money.
Right.
Wow. Well, you know, I'd like them all have some technology. I'd like them to have some, we would change our seat, something where I could be flexible on seating. Because, you know, what my target to be today is how I'm going to set up my room. So I'd want it to be really a malleable space where today it looks like this and tomorrow it looks like that. So that's the first thing I'd be looking for, is some flexibility, some places where I probably would not want desks, you know, at all. Now, while some districts are going to standing desks, you know, there's, and I've used the research in the book, there's this whole new thing about sitting too long, right?
Right.
We don't want to sit too long. So I'd want places where kids can move around, grab their resources, and not feel locked in, you know, just that it's something that would inspire creativity.
That's excellent. Thank you very much. Well, Susie,
my room going to be ready?
What?
The room you're talking about. You building
that
for me? What's the move-in date on that?
somebody help me. I think my mom's calling
okay,
me right now.
Right.
Well, actually, we might be ready soon, so we'll work on that. And there's no laws against that.
Not in two states.
Good. Okay, good. So we'll work on getting that room just exactly for you. And this, you know, those game shows that used to say, we've got a gift specifically picked out just for you, right?
Yay!
Nice. Thank you so much. It's been awesome talking with you. And, you know, one of the things that I want to make sure is that I will share with everyone how they get in touch with you, as well as where they can find Teaching in the Fast Lane, as well as getting in touch with, you know, finding out My Ed Expert and visiting myedexpert.com and
check
looking
it
there,
out. And so, if you need me, just let me know.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Thank you.
We want to remind everyone to check out all of our digital content at teachinglearningleadingk12.com. You can also find our podcast on iTunes.
Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators.